Well, first of all, thank you all for being here this afternoon. I don't know if many of you had a chance to listen in on Dr. Cyril Engman's presentation yesterday on child health and survival, but Dr. Engman's in the back row and is one of my dear collaborators. And as always, when I give a talk like this, it always feels a little disingenuous for me to stand up here alone because it's such a team effort, and I wish our Ghanaian collaborators were here because this is every bit as much their project as ours, and so I hope by me standing here alone, you don't make the mistake of thinking that I'm trying to take credit for the amazing, amazing collaborators that I have. So the title of my talk today is Community Perceptions and Practices Affecting Perinatal Mortality in Rural Ghana, a Mixed Methods Study of the First 7 Days of Life. And as you can see from our list of affiliated organizations, it is a quite diverse group from the University of North Carolina, University of Michigan, the Navrongo Health Research Center, the Ghana Health Service, and the University of Ghana. And neither I nor my co-investigators have any financial disclosures to make. So while our last couple of talks have been about immunizations, I'm going to change gears a little and talk about stillbirth and neonatal mortality. So perinatal mortality, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the term, is the term that reflects stillbirths, babies who are born not viable, babies who are born without a heartbeat, without breathing, and neonatal deaths, those deaths that occur within the first 28 days. Early neonatal deaths are those that occur within the first 7 days. So the statistic is there's 6 million stillbirths and early neonatal deaths, those occurring within the first 7 days of life, which translates to approximately 684 deaths per hour. So that's 2 jumbo jets per hour crashing. Yet 99% of those occur in the developing world. So our study site is in Ghana. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with Ghana, Ghana is a small nation in Western Africa. It's bordered by Togo on one side, Burkina Faso on the north, and Cote d'Ivoire on the opposite side. You can look at the globe down below to get a sense of where it is in Africa. The population of about 22 million, and for those of us who are a little bit more domestically minded, it's about the size of Illinois and Indiana combined, so it's not very large. Natural resources include cocoa, coffee, and gold. When you're in the rural areas, about 60% of deliveries occur outside health facilities, and that means those babies are not necessarily entered into a vital registration system. So there's an awful lot of missing information about exactly what happens in those deliveries that occur outside facilities. There is very little information on perinatal mortality, and the studies that have been done are often hospital-based, or they've got very small sample sizes, or they've done some extremely complex modeling to arrive at estimates that always make you wonder how accurate they might be. So there's an urgent need for some more information. So our particular study took place in Navrongo. If you look at this map of Ghana, in the upper side, you see that red district. That's the Kasena Nankana district. And the Navrongo Health Research Center demographic surveillance system is located within the Kasena Nankana district. For those of you who are not familiar with demographic health surveillance sites, there are 42 sites in the developing world that collect demographic and health surveillance data annually, every 6 months or every 4 months, associated with the in-depth network. And what that means is instead of a nationwide survey that might happen every 4 years, they have much more frequent data collection efforts and are informed by community key informants. So they have people in the community who record pregnancies, births, deaths, migration, et cetera, which gives you an enormous wealth of information to draw upon rather than basing it on a sampled, selected population that happens every 4 years. So in that context, we conducted a two-part study. The first was a quantitative assessment of stillbirth and neonatal deaths using the demographic health surveillance site. And the second part was a qualitative assessment of the beliefs and practices among the perinatal care providers. Now, when we say perinatal care providers, we don't just mean healthcare providers. We mean anybody who had anything to do with infants. So you'll get a list in a bit of exactly who that included, but it's lay as well as formal healthcare providers. So looking at the quantitative component, the aims of our quantitative component were to identify stillbirth, early neonatal death rates, and neonatal death rates in the Upper East region of Ghana. We also wanted to characterize community-based stillbirth, early neonatal death rates, and neonatal death rates in the Kasena Nankana district. The methods to do that involved looking at all registered pregnancies, births, and infant deaths in the DSS system from January 2002 until December of 2008. Maternal and infant data are linked for analysis. The DSS is incredibly complicated. They've got many different databases that they link with unique identifiers, including household data, individual maternal data, and infant data. For the qualitative component, our aims were to understand the beliefs and practices of community members regarding the first 7 days of life. We also wanted to contextualize what we were finding in the quantitative data, and we wanted to inform the development of evidence-based, locally relevant interventions. How did we do that? We conducted in-depth interviews and focus groups with more people than I could possibly fathom. We interviewed mothers and grandmothers, community leaders, healthcare providers, traditional birth attendants, herbalists, you name it, we interviewed them. So what did we ask them about? Based upon the Saving Newborn Lives Tools for Newborn Health qualitative research guide, we developed a pretty long semi-structured tool that covered the prenatal period, delivery care, postpartum, infant care, and traditions. So moving back to results and thinking about our quantitative results, if you look at this graph, forgive me if it's a little small for those of you in the back, there were more than 20,000 pregnant women registered in the system between 2002 and 2008. Of those 20,000 pregnant women, you can see there were 452 stillbirths and 293 early neonatal deaths. And that was the group that we were focused on for our analysis. And looking at our analysis, what those three blue graphs show you is that there were three primary factors that were predictive for stillbirth and early neonatal death. That was multiple deliveries, younger gestational age at delivery, and never having delivered before. This graph shows you that the vast majority of the deaths that occurred within that first 7 days happened on the day of birth and the day right after. If you look, it's 40% on day zero and 20% on day one, meaning 60% of those deaths happen in the first day or two, which is important because, as you can imagine, the implications for intervention are very different if deaths are happening in that first day rather than day seven. This graph also shows you the timing of deaths broken down by type. Not surprisingly, on the first day, if you look at that top dotted line, that's birth asphyxia and birth trauma. Not surprising that on day one, that's the most prominent cause of death. But if you look at that blue line on the bottom, that's infection, and look at how that goes up across that first week. So again, huge implications for intervention in terms of understanding what those causes of death are. So if we look at our qualitative results, we interviewed 253 participants in both in-depth interviews and focus groups. And those boxes along the bottom show you the type of people that we interview and give you exactly the ends and the number of focus groups, etc. Bottom line is we have about 2,000 pages of qualitative transcripts, and we're in the process of sorting through that. So today I can't give you the comprehensive, massive understanding of everything everyone said. I'm going to do my best to pull out a few key pieces. We're anticipating lots of publications out of this, which is exciting, but I think more exciting is the variety of information that we've gained and that I think it will really help inform intervention. So one of the ways we have begun looking at those qualitative results in terms of community perceptions of infant illness is to understand the problems that people identify in terms of infant illness, understand how the community perceives etiology. How does the community think that things are caused? And then what do they recommend in terms of treatment? And I'll just give you a couple of examples of how we've begun to conceptualize that. So in terms of intrapartum related events, things like the umbilical cord being wrapped around the baby's neck or obstructed labor or intrapartum death, here's one quote that illustrates community thinking about that. So when a pregnant woman is sleeping and she wants to turn to the other side of her body, she has to wake up, sit for a while before she can then sleep on her other side of the body. But if she just turned to her other side of her body while still sleeping, that's where the umbilical cord can tie the neck of the unborn baby, and this can kill the baby. That's from an in-depth interview with a woman with a newborn infant. That's the WNI. So immediately postpartum, issues such as the baby not breathing at birth, irregular breathing, fast breathing, or the baby falling sick soon after birth. Here's another quote that represents community thinking about that. If a woman is pregnant and does hard work at delivery, it can cause such problems for the baby. For instance, maybe during her pregnancy, she used to bend down and farm. She can pass water onto the baby's nose, and this may cause problems to the baby. One solution for that, for baby's breathing troubles, has been to hit a hoe next to the baby's ear, which will cause the baby to become more alert and breathe well again. In the early neonatal period, there are issues such as convulsions and seizures, fever, diarrhea, vomiting, and urea lethargy that the community members have identified. With regard to seizures, some of the suggested treatments have been taking the baby to a soothsayer for local treatment, local medicine to smoke the baby's head, making incisions on the baby's face, or using local herbs to smear on the baby's fontanelle. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit and away from the more specific and think about some of the overarching themes that we've seen. And there are five main overarching themes. The first is that the mother is frequently blamed for the afflictions occurring in the neonate. This quote suggests, "The woman should not sleep on her back, because when she does that and when she gives birth, you will see that something will cover the head of the baby. And when this thing is not taken off the baby's head, the baby will die. It's from their stubbornness. An obedient person does not sleep on her back when she's pregnant." A second overarching theme is that in the home, it's the grandmother and the father of the baby, not the mother, who play a pivotal role in household decision-making regarding health and non-health-related newborn practices. The mother is still young, and she does not know anything. When she takes the baby to bed, you, as the mother-in-law, have to go and see what she's done to the baby and then let the baby lie well. When the mother's sleeping in the night, you have to check to see that the baby's lying well. When the baby's body's hot, you have to ask her to take the baby to the clinic. That's a focus group with grandmothers. The third theme that we've identified is that although there is an awareness of healthcare workers and the utility of health centers, the understanding of causation and corresponding therapeutic intervention has a distinctly local flavor, which may impede the optimal management for the baby. Now, in code, what that means is you may see some of these quotes and think these people are nuts, but the reality is that it's come from a cultural context and that these things have developed over years, and there's a meaning and there's a structure around the way these practices are understood. And so the challenge, especially as Westerners, the challenge is to think about this and understand it and put it in a broader context and to figure out an appropriate way to address it as we plan interventions. But you can see this quote at the bottom. A baby can come out unconscious, so the old lady will whistle into its ears and it will start to breathe well again. I'm sure they don't do that in most hospitals in the U.S. The fourth theme that we've seen is that traditional healers play a huge role in the management and referral of newborn problems arising in the intrapartum, immediate, and early neonatal period. At times, we consult our soothsayers to know whether it's a chichuru or not, so that we don't waste time treating it. A chichuru is a term for a spirit child or a baby that really wasn't meant to be alive. That's a whole other talk. If it is convulsions or fontanelle problems, we also have people who treat convulsions, so you have to run there so that they will mark the baby's face before you go to the hospital. And the final overarching theme is that there appeared to be a lack of confidence in healthcare professionals, especially with regard to their ability to manage seizures. Yes, that's what we do here because the nurses don't even have medicine for convulsed babies. So when you go there, they tell you to use local treatment. If it's convulsion or epilepsy and you send the baby to the clinic, you will end up burying it, so unless you do local medicine. So let me take a step back and go through a summary of what we found so far. Looking back at our quantitative data, stillbirth and early neonatal death are a significant problem in northern Ghana, and the biggest risk factors appear to be first and multiple deliveries and a younger gestational age. Within that first week, most deaths occur on the day of delivery and the following day, and the causes of death vary. Asphyxia is prominent on day zero, but infection is prominent by day seven. The major qualitative themes include blaming the mother for the baby's problems. Grandmother and the father, not the mother, are key decision makers. An understanding of causation and treatment have a distinctly local flavor. Traditional healers play a prominent role in the treatment of infant illness, and lack of confidence in a healthcare provider's management of some illnesses, especially seizures. So what are the implications of all of this? I think at a bare minimum, it's important that for optimal health of the newborn, any intervention must incorporate the broad cross-section of individuals who play a prominent role within the community and the home. I think a lot of public health interventions think about targeting individuals. We target that mom, and we say, if we only teach the mom, then the mom will be able to do everything that she needs to do. And in this setting, that's not enough. Absolutely not enough. So in addition to the mother, these need to include opinion leaders, grandmothers, and traditional healers. So as the saying goes, it takes a village to raise a child. In this setting, it also takes a village to save a child. So acknowledgments, I'd like to finish up just by thanking again all of the people who've made this possible: University of North Carolina, University of Michigan, University of Ghana, the In-Depth Network, the Navrongo Health Research Center, but most important, the people of the Kasena-Nankana District, especially the mothers and babies. Thank you very much.